Hello, hello, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Hot History. I am so excited to have you listening along as we talk about all the things in history that you probably should know but don't. And today we are getting down and dirty with French Queen Marie Antoinette.
Class is in session.
French Queen Marie Antoinette is perhaps the most famous female figure in history. Remembered for her role in toppling the monarchy during the revolution, her sumptuous spending habits, and of course, her letting her starving people eat cake. But is this fact, or is she yet another victim of historical fallacy? We will crack the myths and find the truth in the next 20 minutes, but let's start at the very beginning. Maria Antonia was born on November 2nd, 1755, to the powerful and influential ruler of the Habsburg Empire, Maria Theresa, who, like the majority of European monarchs throughout history, believed deeply in alliances. Which is why she signed the Treaty of Versailles, not the World War I one, that allied Austria and France against their common enemy, Prussia. And it was basically because of this event that Maria Theresa and French King Louis XV were set up as future matchmakers and political besties. But the friendship was not so warm and fuzzy. It was clouded by deep anti-Austrian feelings that Louis XV's family held towards the Austrian Empire and, by extension, Maria Theresa and anything which came from her loin. Which brings us back to Marie. Born an Austrian archduchess, her marriage to one of the European royal families or a member of the aristocracy was predetermined. But to marry the future king of France and by extension become the future queen was not something that Marie was ever prepared for. So in April 1770, a mere 14-year-old Marie sets off to begin her life as the Dauphin of France. On April 17th, she renounced her hereditary to the Austrian Empire in front of her family and the Austrian government, and 4 days later, she left her homeland, never to return. This was incredibly difficult for Marie. I mean, imagine yourself renouncing your entire family and nationality, and then being ripped away from them, piled into a carriage and taken across the other side of Europe to marry a man you've never met in a country you've never been to. And all at only 14 years old. The journey was almost a month long, and one of the most interesting ceremonies performed during this journey to Versailles was the literal stripping of her Austrian identity, which allowed her to rid of Maria Antonia and instead embrace her new identity as Marie Antoinette. This was the first of many ceremonies she would endure, which proved just how foreign the French court would be, and she would have to adopt many rituals that seemed arbitrary, strange, and exuberant to her Austrian sensibilities, or else face continued criticism. Remember, no one at the French court is really pro-Austrian at this time, and it was an overwhelming moment for Marie because she began to realise that this new life was fueled by those seeking favouritism and privilege, which the French court operated on. Marie finally met the king and the Dauphin on May 14th in the forest near Compiègne, and there appeared to be much hope for not only a successful marriage, but also a successful reign. In this air of anticipation, Marie Antoinette met her new husband, who was then only 16 years old. His unease and formality caused Marie to get nothing short of the ick. And after the pair were married at Versailles, many concerns arose after nights passed without the consummation of the marriage, aka he couldn't get it up. The court had mixed reactions to the lack of sex the couple engaged in, but Maria Theresa was the most concerned and saw her daughter as a grave disappointment, which she conveyed to her in several letters throughout the early years of her marriage. Marie Antoinette suffered much shame because of her husband's lack of sex drive and was forced to find other ways to maintain her status at court, including schmoozling up to the king's mistress, Madame du Barry, even though those at court universally hated her and lowered what respect they had for Marie as a result of it. But by May 1771, Maria Theresa continued criticising her daughter more harshly and more frequently. Not only was she concerned about her daughter's status as a wife, but she was also concerned about the friends Marie Antoinette kept. She denounced her daughter for laughing with her younger ladies and making fun of others at court, and she was certainly drawing attention to unwise behavior, as quoted by those at the time. It is worth noting that Marie Antoinette was only 16 years old at this time, and as the pressures to fit in amongst the court amounted on her, she acted her age as a means of escape, feeling more comfortable with these girls than with the older generations who constantly judged her. Marie Theresa was simply not accepting of this fact and expected more from Marie, who she had personally trained to be a ruler, and understood that her image was important to maintain popularity with the French people. However, Maria Theresa did not take into account the intricacies and eccentricities of the French court, still solely focused on how Marie's actions reflected as an extension of Austria. Marie did receive some respite from her mother's scolding poison pen letters in June 1773 when she finally visited Paris. And much like any girl, woman, man, or boy, the visit altered her life forever. She wrote to her mother of the event, stating that we received every imaginable honour. The tenderness and the eagerness of the poor people who, in spite of the taxes which oppressed them, were transported with joy on seeing us. The French people had much hope that this young couple would help their country and showed it through their loyal praise and loud cheers. And it was this reaction of the French people that actually surprised Marie and endeared her to them. And there was something that really led her down the road of self-assurance, which eventually led her to the guillotine. The following year, in April 1774, Marie Antoinette's life changed forever when the king went out hunting and began to feel weak. It became apparent that he was suffering from smallpox and would not recover, eventually dying on May 10, 1774, leaving Louis Auguste, 21, and Marie Antoinette, 19, as king and queen of France. It was at this moment the new royal couple declared, "O God, protect us, we are too young to reign." And it was true, for their youth and inexperience would play a major role when making decisions as monarchs. Now concerned about producing an heir, the pressures of becoming queen and her despondent husband becoming king, Marie sought refuge in things such as fashion, which filled the emptiness in her life. Madame Campan, a friend of Marie's at the time, makes this observation that up to this time the queen had shown but a very plain taste in dress, and she now began to make it up an occupation of the moment. And she was, of course, imitated by other women. This caused a great scandal throughout France, and her extravagant ways ignited more attacks against her as queen. The humiliation caused by her lack of heir led her to act more irrationally as time progressed, which only intensified the hatred of the court and now the people, which was presented in pamphlets. These pamphlets, known as libels, became a predominant issue for not only her, but all those in power. Marie Antoinette reported to her mother, "No one was spared, not even the king," which shows that attacks were quite common because authors wanted to display their dissatisfaction with the French monarchy. Although these libels made a complete mockery of the monarchy itself, Marie Antoinette did not seem concerned with their publications. She believed that the libels represented the voices of only a few individuals, not the majority of the French people, which at first they did. And as sure as night follows day, these pamphlets and their successful spreading through increased famine struck France converted more and more people into believing Marie Antoinette was the one true enemy. In order to combat their reactions, Maria Theresa encouraged her daughter to thwart her excessive gambling, ostentatious dressing, and incriminating friendships that soiled her reputation as time progressed. But Marie found breaking these habits extremely difficult. But there was one thing that forced her to slow down. Pregnancy. Marie Antoinette gave birth to a healthy baby girl named Maria Therese, known later as Madame Royal. Although the French court had hoped for a dauphin, they were simply believed the king and queen could have children at all. And even though some were disappointed, Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette were elated. Marie Antoinette declaring, "Poor little one, you are not what we wished for, but you are no less dear to me. A son would have been the property of the state. You shall be mine." Despite having a daughter and finally holding power at court, Marie's troubles did not end, and in 1779 she wrote to her mother for the first time regarding public discontent. France was nearly bankrupt, and Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette were too young and inexperienced to know how to fix this, which was pointed out by Marie's brother Joseph II when he visited Versailles. He saw that the king and queen alienated themselves from their people because Louis was not involved with his military and Marie continued to be frivolous in her personal life. He deduced that in order to achieve greater popularity, Marie Antoinette needed to do her part to remedy the negative opinions about her and needed to take a break from her excessive gambling and late-night trips to Paris. Also, she needed to ensure that her affairs remained secretive, the most prominent being with a Swedish officer named Count Alex Thurson. The king and queen did win some favour with the French people for a short time in 1781 when Marie gave birth to the long-awaited Dauphin of France. At the birth of their male heir, Louis XVI stated, "Madame, you have fulfilled my wishes and those of France. You are a mother of a Dauphin." This was a momentous day for Marie Antoinette, because she had finally satisfied her obligation as a foreign queen. She was more respected because she was finally capable of producing a male who would one day assume the throne and gave her the opportunity to influence the king. Joseph II, now Emperor of the Austrian Empire, used Marie Antoinette's possible influence to aid Austria, and in 1782 Marie was bullied by her advisors to appeal to the king to advance some of Austria's own affairs. However, Louis remained hostile to her for suggesting it to him, and the attempt by Marie to intervene on behalf of her brother became known as the Skelt Affair, and it left the couple's marriage unsettled and the court even more hot under the collar about the foreign queen gaining more influence. It is amongst this atmosphere of distrust, questioning, and gossip that two events occur that cause the people to hold further contempt for the highest ranks of French society by portraying the many flaws and extravagances within the monarchy itself. These two affairs are the Marriage of Figaro and the jewel heist known as the Diamond Necklace Affair. The Marriage of Figaro was a play which showed the flaws of the French monarchy and ignited public indignation, so the king refused to allow the play to be performed. But those in Paris, and even those at court, were deeply infuriated by the king's infringement on their liberties, so he caved and let it play after some censorship. But it was not enough, and when the play was performed, there were still many instances of satire that persuaded audiences of the upper class's ineptitude and spoils. Now, the Marriage of Figaro was followed very shortly after by the Diamond Necklace Affair, in which a 2,800-carat diamond necklace was offered to Marie, but she felt that the setting was far too extravagant and understood that buying such an expensive piece would only incite the people's contempt towards her more. But one power-hungry member of the court, known as Countess Jean Delamotte, hatched a plot to buy the necklace by manipulating one of the jewelers and Cardinal Rohan, her lover and a French bishop. She forged the queen's signature to get her hands on the diamonds, and when they came, she broke them up and sold them on the black market. When the jewelers were not paid, they sent an invoice to Marie Antoinette for 2 million livres, and when she had said that she neither ordered nor received the diamonds, the plot was uncovered. Accomplices of the Countess and herself were brought to trial and punished, and despite Marie having no involvement in the incident, the Diamond Necklace Affair and the ensuing trial were symptoms of the unanimous hatred for the Queen, and her prior frivolous spending made it easy for the French people to believe that she was selfish enough to do it. This was really the final nail in the coffin for Marie's reputation, and the French people and many members of the court had simply run out of grace and explanation for her behaviour. She thus became the unanimous enemy of the French people and the face of monarchical power. Between 1786 and 1788, there were continual problems facing the royal couple politically, which only further alienated them from the French people. In order to solve this, Louis XVI convened the Assembly of Notables on February 22, 1787. However, when this body proved to be incompetent in their ability to solve France's financial problems, the French people became angry and demanded that the Estates General be called. It is obvious here that the king was beginning to lose control, which is interestingly when he turns to his wife for her opinion. Despite her dismissal for years in state affairs, the present circumstances really revealed that there were very few people at court Louis could actually trust. But Marie was not a stateswoman, and she did not fully understand the complexity of the situation before her as a result of being barred from so many decisions in her time as queen. Not only did she have to give opinions on affairs she did not fully understand, but she also had to console her husband, who had sunk into a deep depression. Although Marie tried to aid the king during this time, her new role proved to be a great burden because she was universally uneducated for it and incredibly hated by her people because she represented the waste and decadence they wanted to destroy. When the Estates General was formally called on August 8, 1788, the royal family was suffering greatly because their eldest son died of tuberculosis. Marie Antoinette's grief was great, but she and her family were forced to focus on politics when the Estates General was ousted in favour of the National Assembly. Marie Antoinette had finally learned the lesson that she had to put the well-being of France before that of her own family, a lesson that, if earned earlier, could have helped save her reputation and possibly the monarchy itself. But alas, on October 5th, 1789, Versailles would be invaded and the royal family would be taken to Paris. At this time, Louis was visibly weaker as a monarch, but Marie's strength and resolve to stay the course is an example of the changes in her, rather becoming an adult prepared to die for her right to rule. And so they were bundled into carriages and set off for Paris. This is the last time they would lay their eyes upon Versailles. Eventually, on December 11th, 1792, after years of armed guard and a war with Austria, the monarchy was dissolved, and former King Louis XVI became known as Louis Capet and was put on trial. It would last 6 weeks, during which time he was not allowed to communicate with his wife or children. He was eventually found guilty of treason and put to death on January 21st, 1793. But what about Marie and her children? Well, they were imprisoned in a tower until the children were ripped away from her, so she remained alone, waiting for the fate she knew loomed, which arrived a month later, on August 2nd, when Marie Antoinette was brought to trial that would end in her death by guillotine. Marie Antoinette was convicted not for overt crimes she had committed, but rather convicted to appeal those in Paris. The leader in charge of her fate stated that, "I have promised the head of Marie Antoinette. I will go and cut it off myself if there is any delay in giving it to me." And so he got it, with Marie being accused of crimes that were outlandish and lacked evidence, dying violently, surrounded by those who hated her. So we've covered about 35 years of what can be described as the most dynamic and influential time throughout history, featuring one of history's most dynamic and influential figures. But who else is kicking around at this time? Well, over in Russia, we have Catherine the Great. In England, we've got George III. And in the US of A, we've got George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and all the other founding fathers. We've also got musical maestro Mozart, who even performed for Marie in Vienna when she was 7, and Napoleon Bonaparte, who was 24 years old when Marie and Louis lost their heads. Queen Elizabeth I died 152 years before Marie was born. The Sistine Chapel was painted 243 years before, and 106 years before Marie was born, England beheaded their own monarch, King Charles I. As for after her death, World War I began 121 years later, Betty White was born 129 years after, Victor Hugo wrote Les Miserables 69 years, and the American Civil War began 68 years after as well. So what influence does Marie have on modern times? Well, the dissolution of the French monarchy and Marie and Louis's execution made the first French Revolution a success. They would, of course, go on to have two more before republicanism actually stuck for them, but you've got to start somewhere. She is also responsible for her incredible state apartments at Versailles, which are still made up exactly as they were prior to the revolution, as well as multiple additions to the chateau and grounds itself, most notably her Petit Trianon and the Queen's Hamlet, where she basically cosplayed living as a peasant. But without a doubt, her biggest influence is in the four words in which she is famous for: "Let them eat cake." But did Marie Antoinette say those words? The story goes that when French Queen Marie Antoinette was told that her people were starving from bread shortages, she replied, "Let them eat brioche, a rich bread which was just as luxurious as cake." The now infamous words of the French Queen have been echoed throughout the centuries as a means to justify the actions of revolutionaries, advocate for the abolition of other monarchies, and ultimately confirm her status as history's biggest bitch. It's an effective turn of phrase, which perfectly summarizes how rulers and aristocrats are oblivious to their privilege in a way that seems almost too good to be true. And the reason for that is because it is. There is absolutely no historical evidence to support Marie ever saying the phrase, with its actual origin lying in 16th century Germany when a noblewoman or princess wondered why the hungry poor don't simply eat croissant, a sweetbread. The first person to put this specific phrase into print was the French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau in Book 6 of his Confessions, written about 1767, where he relates a version of the story attributing the quote to a great princess. Although Marie Antoinette was a princess at the time, she was still a child of only 10, so it is unlikely that she was the princess Rousseau had in mind. So how'd she get tied up with the phrase? Now, you may be thinking that it must have been the revolutionaries who simply picked up on the quote and said that the princess in it was actually Marie as a means to try and get her booted. But that is incorrect. Amongst the countless, and I do mean countless, newspapers, pamphlets, labels, and other propaganda targeted towards Marie at the time of the revolution, none of it makes mention to the phrase. In fact, the earliest known source connecting the quote with the Queen was published in one of the subsequent revolutions at least 50 years after she lost her head. It was nothing more than rumour. But why, you may ask, why would someone who died 50 years prior be dredged back up from the depths of history for supposedly saying something about eating cake? Well, the reason's pretty simple. France needed a villain. And not just any villain, it needed a villain that was universally recognisable so they could be universally hated. And what does everyone hate? They hate the bitch. And so that was what Marie became. And finally, how is Marie Antoinette remembered in pop culture? Well, we have to start, first and foremost, with Sofia Coppola's 2006 cinematic masterpiece, Marie Antoinette, featuring Kirsten Dunst as the French Queen. We then have 2022's Chevalier, where she is played by Lucy Boynton, 2023's Napoleon, which opens with her losing her head, and then 2023's Jean du Barry, starring Johnny Depp, just to name a few. She is also played by Elizabeth Barrington in the BBC sitcom Let Them Eat Cake and features in Toy Story as one of the headless dolls that Buzz Lightyear has tea with. Along that same theme, Wednesday Addams' favourite headless doll was also called Marie. She is mentioned in Queen's Killer Queen, Selena Gomez dressed up as Marie for one of her scenes in Love You Like a Love Song, and that just scratches the surface. All in all, Marie Antoinette is one of the most famous and instantly recognisable historical figures to have graced our history books and our modern screens. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Hot History. If you'd like to support us, then you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts as Hot History, follow us on TikTok at hot.history and on Instagram at Hot History Club. As always, it is a pleasure getting down and dirty in time with you, and tune in next time as we discuss the man who brought 300 years of Romanov rule crashing down, Tsar Nicholas II.